Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Hello, good evening and welcome. Wednesday evening, it is just after 6 o'clock. And thanks very much to Dave, looking after you for the last 2 hours with the Daily. And as he said, back to you tomorrow, hopefully between 4 and 6. He's heading off on the A7 safe journey home. And hello to all the family when you get there. Nice to have your company on this Wednesday evening. I still have Monday in my head because, as you know, we've changed just since the beginning of this month. From Monday to Wednesday. Anyway, if you would like to take part in the programme between now and 7 o'clock, I'd love to hear from you. There are two ways in which you can contact me. Firstly, you can send a WhatsApp message if you'd like to +34 645 99 67 95, the usual Talk Radio Europe studio WhatsApp number. Or you can send an email to either studio@tre.radio or myself, Ger@tre.radio, whichever suits yourself. And as I said, between now and 7 o'clock, I will hopefully be able to respond to you on the radio. If it's after that, just send it to me, Ger@tre.radio, and we will go from there. George Lee will be with us this evening. Nice to have George back with us. The first time in 2021, the expense we had to negotiate new contracts and all that. He tells me, he rang me up last week and he said, hey, he said, I have a great idea for the programme. I said, oh yeah, what, you present it instead of me? He said, yeah, but I don't think you're going to go with that. I said, no. So I said, what's your big idea? He said, I'll tell you on air. Now, I went to school with this fella, so I don't know whether I should trust him or not. But anyway, we're going to find out from George what his new idea for the programme is. And knowing George, I'm sure it will be something fun and interesting. So looking forward to a chat with him in the second part of the programme. I am going to be featuring the music of the Wolf Tones. Now, because the programme is only an hour long, I can only do two tracks from each of the featured artists. This is a new feature that we brought in. And if you would like me to feature a particular artist for you, I will happily do so. I'll put it on a list. How's that? I can't remember who it was that asked me to play the Wolf Tones, but I did, and I'm doing it today. So there you have it. All right. You can certainly let me know by email, ger@tre.radio, if you would like me to feature a particular Irish artist or group on the programme, the Wolf Tones, today, as I said. Patricia Traynor will be back to us as well. She's got a great story. I won't tell you too much about it. If you were listening to Dave, you'll know. But if you weren't, that'll teach you to be listening in early in future. Yeah, we'll find out after 6:30, maybe 6:40 or thereabouts, when Patricia will be joining us with her story for today. I'll be playing some great Irish music, including the number one song in Ireland on this very day back in 1993. So that's it. That's what's in store for you. I'm going to start with a bit of sad news, though, because tributes have been paid throughout the day to the Cork opera singer Cara O'Sullivan, who passed away yesterday, aged only 59, after being diagnosed with early onset dementia back in 2018. The Irish National Opera artistic director Fergus Shiel led tributes today to the soprano. He said the untimely passing of Cara O'Sullivan has robbed Ireland of one of its greatest operatic talents. Cara possessed a voice of pure beauty. She had virtuosic skills. And when she unleashed her vocal fireworks, what a lovely way to say it, she made time stand still. Cara's voice had a liquidity and flexibility that could tackle some of the most demanding and glistening soprano repertoire. But her voice was only part of the attraction. He said Cara had a warmth to her personality that never failed to draw in audiences. She knew how to command attention. She strode onto the stage as though it were her own kingdom, and she fed off the audience's rapt responses. Former rugby international and Munster player Donica O'Callaghan said, so sad to hear of the passing of Cara O'Sullivan, a beautiful voice and the kindest person. We will never forget the emotional energy she created before our games. And he's talking here about when she used to sing before the Munster games. Their song is Stand Up and Fight. And he said, until you hear the bell, that final bell, stand up and fight like hell. Aye, nice tribute to her. Taoiseach Micheál Martin led the political tributes to the soprano last night. She had a beautiful voice and the warmest personality. Cork is very proud of her legacy, and I would always value our friendship, he said. So there we go. Just some of the tributes paid today to the late Cara O'Sullivan, and I thought it would be nice to take a track from her to open Live on Era today. Isn't that absolutely beautiful? O Mio Babino Caro, sung by Cara O'Sullivan, a wonderful soprano who passed away yesterday evening at the age of 59, or yesterday. Go Reva Hanum Dilish.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Yes, okay. I know what we're going to do. I'm going to take a track from our Wolf Tones, and then when we come back, I am going to be talking to George Lee about what feature he might have up his little sleeve for us.
My rose of old Erin, by Kathleen Mavourney. Your eyes, they're gonna light many mantles of love. For there in your eyes is the dew of the morning. Taken the light from the sky high above. You capture the blue from the wireless empty. You borrow your smile from the sun in the sky. For you are around the thieving's extensive. You will stall my heart with your true Irish eyes. Irish eyes were smiling. Irish eyes guiding. As the gleam with love, my dear, the light, the skies above. Eyes of heaven's splendor, eyes so warm and tender. Brighter sparks than all of the stars of those Irish eyes of love. Of the flowers of the forest that were none to compare to, the flower that has captured my heart in this way. There in your smile, so warm and so tender, you've taken the heart from the flowers in May. You capture the blue from the bluebells in springtime. You borrow your blush from the rose in the briar. For you are alone, the feeling's extensive. You'll star in my heart with your true Irish eyes. Irish eyes were smiling, Irish eyes beguiling. As they gleam with love, my dear, God light the skies above. Eyes of heaven's surrender, eyes so warm and tender. Brighter sparks than all of the stars of those Irish eyes of love.
Okay, we're going to ask you all, sing along. Irish eyes. Come on, Irish eyes beguiling. Eyes that gleam with love. Look like the skies above.
Eyes of heaven's splendor. Eyes so warm and tender. Brighter spots than all of the stars.
There we go, the first track from our featured artist on the programme this week, the Wolf Tones, and a song called Irish Eyes Are Smiling. So there you have it. All right, I think we've all composed ourselves again, particularly me. Quick break, come back to me after that, and George will be talking to us about a brand new feature.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Hello. We're on our way to me in-laws. We've had an accident.
No problem, sir. I'm dispatching roadside recovery.
Well, it's going to need repairs.
Okay, we'll send a replacement vehicle with a tow truck. Anything else I can help with, sir?
You couldn't, replace me at dinner with me in-laws, could you?
Car insurance from Linea Directa starts from just €194 and comes with a free replacement car in case of an accident. Call Linea Directa on 902-123-616. That's 902-123-616. T's and C's apply.
The new Talk Radio Europe app is available to download for Apple, Android and BlackBerry devices, so you can take TRE with you wherever you go. Download the app from our website, TRE.radio. TRE.radio.
This is TRE. TRE.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. I told you that George Lee had concocted a new idea for us here on Live On Air. He joins me via Skype with this. He hasn't even told me what this is all about. George, how are you?
How are you doing, Ger? How are you?
I'm in top form. It's the first time you've joined us in 2021. Are you enjoying the Wednesday feel of the programme?
Absolutely, Ger. It's wonderful. The only thing I would say is that the month of January feels like about 6 months.
Hard to, but no, I don't think it does, because I was thinking the other day, here we are, the 27th of January. Of course, I was busy throughout. Maybe that's why it kind of flew by. But yeah, we'll be into February next Monday.
La Eile Breitha.
Oh, that's right. St. Bridget's Day. That's right. Now, you said to me that you had a new idea. You got inspired while you were out for a stroll one day.
I was, Ger, and I suppose this goes back a long, long way, because my poor late dad was a courier for CIE Tours for many, many years. Right. And when we'd be out in the car on a Sunday evening, he'd love to sing a song. But in singing the song, he'd always give you the story behind the song as well.
All right.
And I suppose that stuck with me over many, many years. And it, I suppose, clicked something in my head that I have always loved a good ballad, whether it's a modern ballad or an old ballad that has a story behind it. And I love telling those stories. As you know, I love telling stories anyway. But I love telling those. And some of them are so deeply moving and so deeply entrenched in our history and tied up with our history that I said it would be just a lovely thing to do a feature called The Singer and the Song.
Ah, and tell me about the singer and the song. What can we expect?
Well, one of our first ones that we're going to look at, Ger, the story of Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms.
Lovely.
Which, of course, is a song that's a Moore's melody, as they were known. And these became parlour songs, I suppose, around the turn of the 1900s, especially. And then with the coming of gramophones and the likes of John McCormack and these people, they became very much accepted. And in days when the charts, as we would know them now, were actually the charts of sheet music, that people went out and bought the sheet music so that they could learn to play them at the piano. These became very popular.
So my understanding is that what you're going to do is you're going to find out the story behind a particular song, not every week, some weeks, and tell us that story, and then we listen to the song. Is that it?
That's it, Jerry. That's it.
Lovely.
In a nutshell.
Lovely.
And I think by that, we actually begin to learn history. And sometimes I know this stuff comes up in songs, and I wind up going back on history books and things like that to see where the setting was. The other thing that's very important and very interesting was that Thomas Moore turned out to be a compatriot and a college mate of Robert Emmet. And you know how that ended.
Indeed. Okay. What did we learn in school that Robert Emmet said, when Ireland takes her place among the nations of the world, then and only then shall my epitaph be written?
That's it.
That was baiting into me. Baiting into me. All right. We're going to hear the first of those, and we'll hear from you again from time to time, George. Were you always interested in kind of the story behind songs?
Absolutely, Ger. It's been, I suppose, again, you talk about been baiting into you. Well, this was loved into me, I suppose, by my dad, who always had a fantastic idea of the history and place and where he was and why things were that way. And I suppose if you get to an inquiring mind and you listen to lyric, and you know, a lot of these songs were actually poems before they were songs. And the other important part about this particular song is that the music is an ancient Irish lyric, and it was collected by a man called Edward Bunting. And Bunting is recognized as one of the primary sources of collecting of Irish music around the turn of the 1800s. And but for Bunting, a lot of Irish music would have been lost.
All right, let's take a listen to the first of those. And George, we look forward to hearing these over the next couple of months and weeks and so on.
Great. There's nothing new under the sun, and there have been many pandemics much worse than the one we are currently experiencing. And it is from a smallpox epidemic in the early 1800s that we get one of the most beautifully lyrical songs ever written in the English language. Thomas Moore was a member of the Irish Catholic aristocracy. One of the first Catholics to be admitted to Trinity College Dublin, he counted amongst his friends and compatriots none other than Robert Emmet. He trained in law, but writing and the arts were always of more interest to him. Between 1808 and 1810, when he was in his early 30s, he appeared each year in Kilkenny with the mixed group of professional actors and high society amateurs. Amongst those was a lady called Elizabeth Bessie Dyke. In 1811, Moore married Bessie. Together with Bessie's lack of a dowry, the Protestant ceremony may have been the reason why Moore kept the match for some time secret from his parents. Bessie shrank from fashionable society to such an extent that many of her husband's friends never even met her. In fact, some of them jokingly doubted that she even existed. Those who did held her in high esteem. Tragically, Moore and Bessie were to have 5 children, none of whom survived them. But theirs was a deep love which was to be further tested. Through some unfortunate business dealings, Moore wound up having to go to Europe to recoup losses which could have placed him in a debtor's prison. While in Venice, he met and became the literary executor of Lord Byron's estate. On his return, Bessie had suffered smallpox. People who recover from smallpox usually have severe scarring, especially on the face, arms and legs. And Bessie worried that Moore would no longer love her due to her scarring, and she locked herself away. Moore took to writing, and while walking in the grounds of Kilkenny Castle, he penned a poem to Bessie, which he later put to an ancient Irish air that had been collected by Edward Bunting. The beautiful words of that poem still exist, and they go as follows. Believe me if all those endearing young charms which I gaze on so fondly today were to change by tomorrow and fleet in mine arms like fairy gifts fading away. Thou wouldst still be adored as this moment thou art. Let thy loveliness fade as it will, and around the dear ruins each wish of my heart would entwine itself verdantly still. It's not while beauty and youth are thine own, and thy cheeks unprofaned by a tear, that the fervour and faith of a soul can be known, to which time will but make thee more dear. Oh, the heart that is truly loved never forgets, but as truly loves unto the close, as a sunflower turns on her god when he sets, that same look which she turned when he rose.
Never.
Isn't that just beautiful? John Count McCormack. I know it sounds like it, but just to tell you, that recording is actually 100 years old this very year. It was recorded in 1911 and it gave just a lovely authentic feel after listening to the story, the singer and the song. I like it. I like it. Thank you very much, George Lee. There you go. We'll send him out walking more often, get a few more good ideas. And he'll be back with us again with a few more of those as the weeks and the months go by. Looking forward to that. The story today of Believe Me, If All Those Endearing Young Charms. Max has been in touch. Thanks, Max. He was talking, he made reference in his text to some fella with a connection to Ireland, not stopping for a breath. It could have been worse, Max. You could have had me talking to 7 o'clock. I know there's a built-in mechanism that if there's silence for, I don't know, is it a minute or something, music kicks in so that there's a way out. But I didn't want to take the way out because I figured things would come back to normal. Anyway, thanks, Max. He says, give that man a Guinness. I second that emotion. Right, I'm going to take a break. And just after the break, we are going to listen to the number one song in Ireland on this very day back in 1993.
Live on Era. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
TRE, your voice in Spain.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
If you'd like to get in contact with the programme, I'd love to hear from you. As always, you can WhatsApp +34 645 996795, or you can send an email to either of the two email addresses, studio@tre.radio or ger@tre.radio. COVID has very much focused everybody's attention and it has managed to keep certain things at bay. It has managed to stop us from travelling. It has managed to stop us from seeing our loved ones in many, many cases, but it's done other things too. I see this evening that police in Northern Ireland have said that they are noticing growing discontent expressed via graffiti and social media among unionists over its post-Brexit divergence with Britain. Police Service of Northern Ireland, the PSNI, Assistant Chief Constable Mark McEwen told lawmakers that the coronavirus pandemic had so far helped, in his words, moderating people's behaviours in terms of the desire to protest. He said, were we not in this current environment, we would probably see a more visible outworking of that on the streets. Unionists are angry over the new custom checks and regulations required on goods travelling across the Irish Sea, complaining that there is now a border between the region and Britain. The new checks came into effect as a result of the Brexit deal, which was struck between the UK and the European Union on Christmas Eve last, taking effect on New Year's Day. Northern Ireland is still in the EU's single market for goods, enabling it to keep a soft border with the Republic of Ireland. However, the rest of Britain has left the single market, so checks are now needed when shuttling goods across the Irish Sea. So there you go. That's something that I would imagine authorities in Britain, Northern Ireland, and indeed here in the Republic of Ireland would certainly have been aware of and keeping an eye on. And there you go. That would be proof of the pudding. All righty. There's a little bit of a sad story with this, because this song was number one in Ireland on this day back in 1993. And it just stayed there for 1 week, but it came a couple of months after the singer had died. A young woman, I think she was a relatively young woman from Limerick, and was well known for her beautiful singing, and would have been somebody that released music and would have got airplay on local radio stations down through the years, and she would have sung in local events and functions and things like that. But her story gripped the nation, and she went to number one with a double A-side at this time, and Life Without You. And I could only track down the Life Without You, so I'm going to play that today. The late Chris Moore, the number one song in Ireland on this day back in 1993.
Broken heart and empty eyes, simple things.
That's the late Chris Moore from Limerick, and that song went to number one for her posthumously in 1993, and it was there on this very day on that year in Ireland. So there you go. Yeah, tragic old tale. It was cancer, I think, that she died from. So yeah, anyway, there you go. What should we do? I'll tell you what we will do. We'll take a break because I have one more break to take, and that'll give us a good run at the to the end of the programme then. And we're not too far away from that at all, because the time at the moment is 18 and a half minutes before the hour. Yeah, that's how quickly time flies.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Okie dokie, into the fourth part, into the fourth and final part of the programme, to be honest. More than €1 billion was spent by consumers using contactless payments in Ireland in December. Wow, that's the highest monthly total ever recorded. Data published today by the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland, that's the BPFI, shows that the total spent by Irish consumers via contactless payments broke the 10-figure mark for the first time last month. The average of €36.5 million was spent via contactless payments in Ireland every day during December, when 2.1 million people per day used contactless payments, overtaking the previous peak of 2.01 million per day in September. Now, many people switched to using contactless payments last year or increased how often they use them as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. At the beginning of the pandemic, the government raised the maximum amount that a person could spend via a contactless payment from €30 to 50. The volume and value of contactless payments in the last quarter of 2020 rose by almost 24% compared with the 3 months previously, and 63.4% year on year to 2.8 billion. That came despite a drop in the number of contactless payments in Ireland in November, due in part to the introduction of level 5 restrictions in late October. Now, the BPFI Chief Executive Brian Hayes said that December's record-breaking figures showed how COVID-19 has reshaped payment methods in Ireland. I would think this is an absolute godsend for the likes of the banks and for the likes of the government, particularly when they're trying to clamp down on fraud and tax evasion and the use of cash. And somebody, I heard somebody recently say that cash, they had thought up to this time last year, thought cash would be kind of mostly done away with in 10 years. But the pandemic has brought that forward and could realistically be done and dusted for the majority of us in about 5 years or thereabouts. Anyway, there you go. Right, Patricia has another story for us. So let's hand over to Patricia Traynor.
Well, hello, Ger. Here we are again. And I'm going to talk to you about somebody else who I actually knew quite well, because I lived around the corner from him in Belfast. And then later, we were very fortunate to have him here in Malaga with us when he came to give us a talk in the University of Malaga, and has been, I mean, a good friend, really, over the years. And his name was Seamus Heaney. Well, he was born on the 13th of April in 1939 in the townland of Tamnéireann between Castledawson and Tunbridge, Northern Ireland. He attended primary school in Annahorish, but later the family moved to nearby Belache, and he won a scholarship to attend St. Columb's boarding school in Derry. St. Columb's actually can boast at having produced another Nobel Prize winner, John Hume, who shared the Nobel Peace Prize with David Trimble in 1998. In 1957, Seamus Heaney went on to study English language and literature in Queen's University, Belfast. He was inspired to write poetry when he came across Ted Hughes's book, Lupercal, and he was awarded a first-class honours degree and went on to St. Joseph's Training College. When he was on teaching practice in St. Thomas's, he met Michael McLaverty, who was not only the headmaster of the school, but was also a writer. And he introduced Heaney to the poetry of Patrick Kavanagh. Heaney identified with Kavanagh as someone who had come from a similar background, and as a result, he began writing and publishing poetry. He was always very grateful to McLaverty for his help and encouragement, and the poem Fosterage is dedicated to him. In those early days, Heaney published his work under the pseudonym of Inciertos. His quest had been inwards and downwards, seeking out that which was known or apparent, but which had been hidden or submerged and lost over time. The bog poems illustrate this. His work appeared in local magazines, and it came to the notice of Philip Hobsbawm, who was a lecturer in the English department in Queen's at the time. Hobsbawm set up a Belfast group of young local poets, and it was there that Heaney met other poets such as Derek Machen and Michael Longley. Hobsbawm was inspirational and undoubtedly played an important role in bringing out the best in his students. In 1963, Heaney was appointed lecturer in St. Joseph's Training College. His first major book in 1966 was called Death of a Naturalist, and it was a resounding success, and he won several awards, including the Gregory Award for Young Writers and the Geoffrey Faber Prize. Soon after, he was appointed as a lecturer in modern English literature in Queen's University, Belfast. The poem Blackberry Picking in his book Death of a Naturalist is dedicated to Philip Hobsbawm. Heaney became a lecturer in the English department at Queen's in 1969, and soon after he was invited to go to America as a guest lecturer in the University of California in Berkeley. He returned to Queen's in 1971. When he returned, Belfast was at the height of the Troubles, and in 1972, he left his lectureship in Belfast and moved to Wicklow, where he became a full-time writer. He published a new collection called Wintering Out. He found himself in an extremely difficult position. On the one hand, he realised the power of the word, and on the other, the tremendous responsibility he was faced with, being a poet in Northern Ireland at a very sensitive period. My poets have always been held in high esteem in Ireland since earliest times. The Celts were fascinated by the power of the word, and the great noble families had their own in-house filly or poets. The filly occupied a very important place in the ranking order of the Irish hierarchy and were almost on a par with royalty. However, today things have changed, and the power of the poet is certainly not what it was. However, Heaney was very much aware of his responsibility in a climate where feelings were running high and polarisation and emotional manipulation were rife on all fronts. Heaney recognised the dangerous minefield of the Troubles as he attempted to address the appalling complexity and barbarity of the situation. There were people who criticised him for leaving Northern Ireland in 1972 and going south to County Wicklow when the Troubles were at their height. But in a way, he needed to distance himself both physically and mentally to be able to write both Wintering Out and another volume called North. Although the total population of the province is only about 1.5 million, real communication is impossible between two groups of people who are divided by a common history. Seamus Heaney makes reference to this lack of common ground and highlights the division and the banality of social politeness between the two communities in his poem The Other Side. In that poem, he talks about how a Protestant neighbour comes to call when the Catholic family are saying the rosary and he, the poet, is outside in the yard. He says, and this is the poem, "Should I slip away, I wonder, or go up and touch his shoulder and talk about the weather or the price of grass seed?" This kind of communication where both sides avoid all dangerous topics results in a very superficial type of interchange and highlights the fact that people generally feel very uncomfortable when talking to strangers until they have established whether the person they're talking to is Catholic or Protestant. People from outside Northern Ireland think this is amazing, that that should be such an important issue. But establishing which foot you dig with is important for a comfortable conversation and is quite an art. One only has to ask where a person lives or what school they went to or what their name is, and their religious and political viewpoints are clear. Pronunciation of certain words or letters are also a good clue to someone's religious affinities. Catholic people usually pronounce the first letter of the alphabet as A rather than the more anglicised A sound. The letter H is also another giveaway. Catholics tend to pronounce it H rather than H. Irish-sounding names such as Seamus and Liam and Siobhan are indications of a Catholic nationalist, while English names such as Norman, Beryl, or Mildred would most likely be Protestant. Heaney was always in demand to give readings, not only in Ireland, but also in the UK and the United States. In 1975, Heaney published his fourth volume, North, and later the same year, a pamphlet of prose poems entitled Stations. He was appointed head of English at Carysfort College, a teacher training college in Dublin, in 1976. Carysfort College has quite a few important figures among their teachers. For example, Eamon de Valera had been professor of mathematics there for 10 years, from 1906 to 1916. Right, we know why he ceased in 1916. He later became Taoiseach and then President of Ireland. When Is Dana, the National Irish Arts Council, was established in 1981, Heaney was among those elected into its first group. He was subsequently elected a C, one of its five elders, and its highest honour in 1997. In 1981, Heaney was a visiting professor at Harvard. He was given an honorary doctorate from Queen's University and also from Fordham University in New York City in 1982. We were really honoured when Seamus Heaney accepted our invitation to come to the University of Malaga in 1985. He gave a wonderful lecture in the university and then did readings from his poetry in the official language school. The Malaga students were amazed at how approachable he was. He was really friendly and generous with his time, and he stayed talking to them long after the lecture had finished. And he even went to a bar with them and continued to chat over wine and tapas. There are not many world figures who would do that. Heaney has been greatly influenced not only by Irish writers such as Yeats, Joyce, Kavanagh, Carleton, Louis MacNeice, but also by many other writers such as Shakespeare, Dante, Wordsworth, Gerard Manley Hopkins, Ted Hughes, Robert Frost, R.S. Thomas, as well as many Eastern European poets. All these helped to make Seamus Heaney the great poet he was. He has been acclaimed as the most important poet in Ireland since W.B. Yeats. So it came as no surprise when he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. Heaney was professor at Harvard University from 1981 to 1997 and its poet in residence from 1988 to 2006. He has received multiple awards and was at one time even professor of poetry at Oxford University. Unfortunately, he had a stroke in 2006, but he never lost his wonderful sense of humour. After he had been fitted with a heart monitor following the stroke, he joked, "Blessed are the pacemakers." That had saved his life. He not only wrote poetry, but also plays and did translations. For example, the Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. Sadly, he died on the 30th of August, 2013. Ireland mourned his loss. But not only Ireland. The world has lost one of its greatest poets. He is remembered for his rare gift, which made him an inspiring poet who will go down in history. He was generous in donating his literary papers to the National Library of Ireland. His son had helped him pack them up, and together they brought them down to the National Library. He is buried in the cemetery of St. Mary's Church, Belachy, Northern Ireland. The headstone bears the epitaph, "Walk on air against your better judgment." He had explained this earlier by saying, and a quote, "My poetry on the whole was earth-hugging, but then I began to look up rather than keep down. I think it had to do with a sense that the marvellous was as permissible as the matter of fact in poetry." Let us remember the words of Seamus Heaney to make us believe that dreams do come true. This is from his poem called Troy. "So hope for a great sea change on the far side of revenge. Believe that a further shore is reachable from here. Believe in miracles and cures and healing wells." I think this could also be applied to the present COVID pandemic.
Indeed it could. Patricia, thank you very much indeed. And if you happen to be listening to the programme this evening, I wish you and your family well. I'm not going to get a second track in from the Wolf Tones this evening. I am on Friday. I'm going to be on the radio between 4 and 6 filling in for Giles. So if you're mad, Wolf Tones fan. I will play the track I was going to play because it's 4.5 minutes long and I've only got 2 minutes and 45 seconds left. I'm not even going to get all of this in, but I'd rather just clip the end of this than take half of the song from the Wolf Tones away. Here's a man that passed away, unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago. A great man, great entertainer. Joe Cuddy is his name.
I closed my eyes, drew back the curtain to see for certain what I thought I knew. Far, far away, someone was weeping, but the world was sleeping. Any dream will do. I wore my coat with golden lining, bright colors shining, wonderful and new. And in the east, the dawn was breaking as the world was waking. A crash of drums, a flash of light, my golden cloak flew out of sight. The colors faded into darkness, I was left alone. The world and I, we are still waiting, still hesitating. Any dream will do. A crash of drums, a flash of light, my golden cloak flew out of sight. The colors faded into darkness, I was left alone.
Here we go. Joe Cuddy. Unfortunately, we lost Joe just at the start of the new year. And a song called Any Dream Will Do, for taking us back to the early 1970s. That's my lot for today. Thank you to George Lee for the singer and the song. Thank you to Patricia for that wonderful story about Seamus Heaney. Thank you for listening. Thanks, as always, to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, Jose Antonio Sierra. We'll be hearing from him again very shortly. I'm back on Friday. If not, we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye and thank you.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.